I moved up to Buffalo, New York, around the time the Bills was playing in the Super Bowl. I figured if I bet on New York Giants, I was going to be able to get high if they win. And if they lost, I'm in Buffalo, so if they win, I'm still going to get high. My mind was always thinking of ways and means to get more. And what happened was a few years after that, after life and the drugs had beat me down so bad, I ended up in Narcotics Anonymous. And I have to share this because I keep saying I'm not like a lot of y'all. I'm not. I think I'm different because I heard a lot of y'all's story. See, when I came in and they said, get a sponsor, I said, shit, I don't know what it is, but I want one of those. See, I was like that. I was in the rehab. Dude came up from H&I. Hey, man, what about it? My man said, what about what? I said, you know, be that thing for me. I said, be what thing for you? What the hell is you talking about? I said, if you were a sponsor, you know, for real, because I had to get one. I'm one of those addicts. I don't care if you did buy it. Let me go first. I swear I'll save you some. Yeah, let me go first. Me and you will be in a fight. I'm talking about from alcohol all the way to the crack. Man, you know, I'm going to save you some. I'll turn my back. And that's where you're going to have to hit me at to make me stop. So anyways, I ended up getting a home group, my first meeting I went to. I don't know about nobody else. Everybody else, they be saying, I had to wait to check stuff out. What was I checking out? I come from an abandoned building. I come from being homeless, helpless, and useless. Besides that, girlfriend at the door, she said, welcome, newcomer. Today, got that, oh, she liked me. You know what I mean? It was all over. I made that my home group. I figured if I come here, she was going to hug me. And I stopped being a part of right away. They told me, I'm going to give you a job right over here. Greet people as they come in. I didn't know nobody because I was from Chicago. Next thing you know, I started meeting people. And I told my sponsor how good I am at meeting people. He said, well, who you meet? I said, I met Barbara, Francine, Josie. He said, man, you got to meet some guys. I was like, man, I don't be wanting to meet no guys. You know what I'm saying? I like meeting women. He said, no, that ain't how recovery is. See, you got to meet everybody. So then I had to start meeting some of you guys. Because I had a feeling of what do I have to say to you to make you like me? Because I already know I don't like you. So why would you like me anyway? So my sponsor told me, first of all, instead of then approaching people with the attitude, I don't know about y'all, I always had one. The world is against me. My sponsor said approach people with open arms. You know, try to open your arm up a little bit and lean forward a little bit like I'm going to give you a hug. And I was saying to myself, man, people are going to reject me, man. I don't want to do that. And he said, no, try. And I started doing it. I was doing that to some guys, and guys started hugging me. And it was the most beautiful thing I ever seen met in my life was a hug. You know what I'm saying? And the next thing you know, my sponsor told me, he said, hey, man, how much time you got? So I got 6 months. He said, guess what? It's time for you to start working some steps. I was like, hey, man, I ain't got time for that. I'm a player. I know all these girls. I do and I go to the parties and the picnics. He said, no more of that. Time for you to get busy. Might as well roll your sleeves up. Then I started reading and writing, man. Did a first step, second step, third step. By the time I got into my fourth step, I started finding out who I really wasn't. You know what I mean? My fifth step showed me who I kind of am, what I'm going into be. You know what I mean? And I started doing step work, and as we did step work, we also did traditions. By the time I did 11th tradition, the thing about the 11th tradition, it's one of our smallest traditions in the basic text. You know that? So that means there's not much to talk about. And traditions normally is kind of boring. But what I found out is in the 11th tradition, when it talks about our public relationship policies based on attraction rather than promotion, and we need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film, didn't know we had a relationship with the public because I thought we weren't supposed to tell people that we was from Narcotics Anonymous. Because a lot of people were talking about, man, I got a job, and I don't want people to know that I'm in NA, so don't hug me when I'm at the grocery store. Don't speak to me when I'm in the bank. And I was like, oh, so this is a secret society, which it says we're not. We're not a secret society. And if you feel like that, then that's your prerogative. You can feel like that. But we have to get a relationship with the public telling them about Narcotics Anonymous so they'll know where we're at. You know what I mean? Because at one point, I remember seeing what you call on the bus, a flyer on the bus, and said, if you have trouble with drugs, call this number, Narcotics Anonymous. I said, oh, man, I was supposed to do that. That's advertisement. A lot of times, you got to get into the literature. They said, once you break the tradition, then you'll know more about it. But at the time, I also seen this. Let me share this with you right quick. I also seen on a TV program, these people was on TV saying that they was addicts, that they was members of Narcotics Anonymous, and da-da-da-da-da, you should come as one of them, what, the public service channels, y'all know what I'm talking about? And I used to see these people. And every time I seen them, and I think you're a TV star, since I seen you on TV, I'd be like, ooh, that's that right there. You know, this lady was on, man, that's her right there. And I thought, you know, I better get her number, right? And then she used. I'm telling you, it's a true story. And then she used. I was like, so I was telling my sponsor, man, how did she get out? You know, if she got hot, if there's no hope for me. He said, it ain't like that. You know, it's really not like that, you know. What we do when we talk about public, we want to get our public policy, I mean, our policy with the public, what we want to do is tell them about Narcotics Anonymous. Me personally, I start telling people about how good Narcotics Anonymous been to me. That's not what it is. We got to tell them cut and dry about Narcotics Anonymous. We're a fellowship of men and women whose drugs have become a major problem. We try to come in here. We try to stay clean on a day-to-day basis. Even if you don't come to clean, we still love you and welcome you. You know, we just ask you the next time you come, try to come back clean. But a lot of times we don't do our members like that. You know, I remember in early recovery, man, I'm sitting down, you know, early recovery. I don't know about y'all, but I was a player. Because there were some girls that were like me. Nobody really liked me. And every time I sit down, people used to get up. Thinking, but now people sitting by me and they ain't moving, so I thought they liked me. Then this dude sat down, and he smelled straight like alcohol. And girlfriend said, oh, he smelled like alcohol. What should we do? I said, we should put him out. Smelling like alcohol. He's drinking. So I went and told this guy. I said, yo, man, dude over there smell like, you know, I'm ready. Now, dude smell like alcohol, man. We got to pull this ass out. He said, the only reason you didn't smell like alcohol when you came here because you went to the rehab first. And I didn't know that. That didn't cross my mind. He said, that guy there probably wasn't fortunate enough to go to rehab for 30 days or 28 days or 21. He just walked in right off the street because he had enough. At that time, I didn't believe my sponsor. I was like, man, you know, I mean, not my sponsor. The guy was like, you don't know what he's talking about, man, because people can't get clean, just walk off the street. But what happened? I met a whole bunch of people. It was this one guy said he left a whole table full of dope. I used to think that was a lie until I heard somebody else say it. They left a whole table full of dope and came into a meeting. I was like, that is impossible, man. They ain't telling the truth. Until I had a sponsee. I was sharing that 2 years clean. This guy walked right through the door, started listening to me, you know what I'm saying? And after the meeting, man, dude walked up. He said, man, I need you. I said, well, you know, talking to him, what rehab you come? He said, man, I just got through getting high. I left some dope on the table and came straight here. Just telling the truth. You know what I mean? So some stuff was unbelievable and some stuff is just believable because I experienced it. But a lot of times, I don't need to tell you about me. I need to tell you about Narcotics Anonymous. That's when it's come to our public relationship policy. And then they say it's based on attraction rather than promotion. And a lot of times, you know, everybody feels different. I don't know what y'all attraction was. You know, I just told you what my attraction was. That girl gave me a hug. That attracted the hell out of me. You know what I mean? And people was kind of friendly. Because they said, yo, y'all, this is a newcomer. And everybody kind of got up and came over to hug me and stuff. You know, You know, you don't know what's happening. Everybody's hugging you and stuff. But I'm just saying, man. I don't know about y'all. All I can remember is that perfume. Man, them girls. Y'all guys probably hugged me, but I ain't remember that. I remember them girls hugging me. And they, boy, they hugged me, man. I'm trying to tell you something for real. I don't know about nobody else. First thing came to my mind, I'm going, keep coming back to see it. For real. And that's what made me come back to the next meeting. There wasn't no heavy message of recovery, because I wasn't listening to none of that. I was looking around. I know she liked me. I know she liked me. I know she, for real. I don't know about nobody else. I'm talking about when I came in, I was already 3 cans short. Yeah, I had to go to the psychiatrist. I had to go to anger management. I had to go to, they kept me for about 2 years going to group. I know some of y'all probably said, damn, he was messed up. But guess what? God be doing amazing things. You know what I mean? So the attraction to this program later on became the message of hope for me. You know what I mean? Because I started getting attracted to the more experienced member that was sharing recovery. But when I first got here, see, one guy told me jewelry and cars attracted him. I said, oh, you know, well, okay. But I couldn't lift my eyes that high when I first got here. I couldn't see no cars. Man, my head was down. But I'm telling you, man, there wasn't nothing wrong with my nose. I smell perfume, man. I don't care what nobody says. It was working for me. You know what I mean? And it talks about the promotion, man. And that's something that I didn't know. It is a certain promotion to this program. Our promotion is that we stay clean and this in our own rights, that this program works. We see it every day through clean time. Huh? But I was thinking that I'm supposed to go out and tell people, yo, man, you know what I'm saying? I'm born in Narcotics Anonymous, man. That's what you need in your life. I swear, man. I told all my friends and stuff, you know what I'm saying? Because I would see them at the store. I didn't really want to be at the store, you know. But every other now and again, I would go to the store and that was my buddies. And they'd be like, damn, Don, man, let me hold a dollar. You know how that goes, you know. Selling, got a few chains, put a few quarters in my pocket, you know. And I'd be like, man, you know what you need, man? You need Narcotics Anonymous, man. Just for today, you keep coming back. And then they'd be like, man, give me a dollar and shut the fuck up. I don't want to hear that shit. I'm trying to buy a drink, you know. I'm just telling you. So I thought I was supposed to, you know, bring everybody in. And then I ended up going back home to Chicago. And my brother, I got two older brothers. They said that they don't get high no more. And I got a sister. She said she don't get high no more. And I got another sister. She said she was going to church. She don't get high at all. So when I got back, I thought my family was going to welcome me with open arms. Well, my oldest brother took me out to something like, they wanted a retreat, but it was something like this, out in the woods. But they had a case of Lowenbrow. I said, man, I thought you said you don't get high no more. He said, shh, I don't. I just drink. I said, because it started coming true. You don't know what you don't know. I know a drug is a drug. It's a drug. And I know that alcohol is a drug. But my brother didn't know that. He proclaimed he clean today. And I was like, jeez. And I ended up drinking some pop that day. That's how I got hooked on Pepsi. And then I hung out with another one of my brothers. You know, because I can't mess with him. You get high. When I hung out, I got a brother, me and him look just alike. We look like twins. And he said, we got to get some coochie. And I said, hey, let's just pay for it. You know, because I ain't got time to be talking to nobody. And my brother said, no, man, that ain't how you get it. You just don't buy coochie. You got to buy crack. I said, no. I've been clean for a while. You don't buy crack to get coochie. You just give them the cash. My brother said, that ain't what you do, man. What's wrong with you, man? Man, we in Chicago, man. I don't know about y'all, but it's a certain walk, a certain slang they got, you know. And I had done lost my walking slang, you know. I'm walking like I'm clean today. And my brother was like, man, what's wrong with you, man? Man, we got this motherfucker. You know, then, I'm just saying, after listening to him for a while, I said, yo, you know, you're right. And by the time we went and got the dope, my girlfriend was sitting there talking about she wanted to smoke before she took care of me. I was saying to myself, what in the hell am I doing? What the hell am I doing here? I said, look here. I popped this shit. I turned the water on. Because I don't give a fuck about this here. You can do what you're going to do. I got to get out of here. I left out. My brother was sitting there. I was, because he told me he wanted to go get high. I thought he was just outside waiting for his turn. I walked home all by myself again, thanking God. Because I was just in the grips. Huh? I don't even know how I got off the lion's den. I knew it was only through God's grace and mercy. So then, I went and hung with my oldest sister, and she stole about $950 from my auntie, who I was staying with. So who do you think they think stole it? I'm the one that's coming from out of town. But only through God's grace and mercy, my auntie said, boy, I know you didn't take it because you was a changed man. You ain't the same guy you left here. I could feel God's presence in me. I was like, wow. And then let me know something is working. So guess what I did? Went and got with my little sister. You know, the one that says she go to church. Y'all ain't feeling me yet, is she? I went and got with my little sister. Well, my little sister died. So I said, look, I don't know about nobody else. I said, let me sit my ass right here. I don't know about y'all, man, but that's what I had to sit with. You know what I mean? And I stayed clean. You know, but I'm just letting you know, man, a lot of times we think that we're supposed to pull people in. Because I came to tell my brothers them about Narcotics Anonymous and how they face it. My brother and my sister, I was going to preach it up to them. And they almost pulled me in. Only through God's grace and mercy. But check this out. Right now today, my brother's celebrating 11 years clean. My sister celebrating 4 years clean. My oldest brother got 6 years clean. I came to Buffalo by myself. Right now I got nephews there. I got cousins there. You know what I'm saying? People is following me. You know what I'm saying? Only because I try my best to carry this message of hope to the addict who still suffers. This is one of the pet peeves you saw always messing me up. Because, see, when I came in Narcotics Anonymous, I told you I'm from Chicago. I've been a hustler all my life. All my life. I was in third grade. I used to find pencils and pens. And I would go and sharpen them and match, put a match to the pen and make sure they can write. And I would go to school and sell them for a nickel. Nickel for a pencil, dime for a pen. You know, the number two pencil that you had to do tests with? Oh, man, I'm racking up. So I've been like that all my life. Then I was supposed to be a newspaper boy, right? I don't know. Do they have them out here, the newspaper thing, you know, that you put a quarter or something in and pull the slot down, and they got a stack of newspaper in there? Well, I stuck a piece of wire down in there, slapped that basket open, and took all the paper except the one that was in the front. You know what I mean? And I would go and sell the paper. Now, what, y'all trying to call me a criminal or something? And I was hustling, man. I was trying to make me some money. So I guess by the time I was in high school, I was working at a cookie factory. And they would say, hey, Don, see all these cookies here? Throw them away. Oh, but throw them away? What you mean throw them away? Because they bake fresh every day. So I said, can I take the cookies with me? He said, yeah. So I would take the cookies to school and sell them. Then I worked at this place, one of them fine cuisine places, you know, real, you know, where they bring your food out and be on fire, you know what I'm talking about? And I would have to get these crabs and shoot the stuff out of them, live crabs, about 100 of them. And then I would have to take ribs, slabs of ribs, take this knife and cut all the meat off, throw the meat in the garbage, and put the bones in the pot. Then I got to cut up all the onions and all this other stuff. Then I would take a chicken. I would take the chicken and take the neck out of it. Throw that in the pot. Cut the two wings off and throw the rest of it in the garden. You know what I mean? And they used to make some kind of sauce out of this here. So what y'all think I did when I got off work? Shit, I went in the garden and got that meat out of there. Break up and sell the meat. Anyway, they fired me. They fired me for going in the garden. Anyways. I don't know how that happened. But it seemed like that was a terrible thing to do to me. But I was gonna sell that meat. Matter of fact, I did. I sold some and gave some to my family. Then I started working construction. When I got here and got clean, God blessed me with a construction job. By the time I left, I was making $40 an hour. But even though I made $40 an hour, I never spent my check on nothing. I would put it in the bank. I would go over to another job and work for $22 an hour because I was a foreigner. I would spend that check on bills. Then I DJ. So I was going to DJ on the weekend and use that money to have in my pocket. I thought it was a brilliant idea because I always said I was a hustler. I'm trying my best to have some money in my pocket. And I got that money there for safekeeping. I don't know what they told y'all when y'all was little, but my uncle told me, boy, save you a penny. So I put my check over here and never spent that. And the other money I made, I put that in this bank so I could pay my bills. And I would, on the weekend, would have about, you know, $500, $600, $700 just from DJing. So I could, you know, buy cigarettes and all that other crap, girls and all that, you know, crazy stuff, right? And in the long run, I thought for sure that if I take your picture, because I started taking pictures with DJing, you know, I boost my little thing up, you know, take a picture too. And people used to tell me, hey, man, you can't take our picture. We in N.A. I be saying, this ain't no meeting. We outside. This is a party. They used to tell me, you can't take pictures at a party. I said, why not? Lemon tradition. He said, man, lemon tradition ain't got nothing to do with me taking a picture outside. This ain't even a meeting. This a function. And they ain't nobody never say, yo, let that guy take pictures. They used to, like I used to have to take you in the next room to take a picture. Until somebody had came from out of town and said, man, he ain't breaking no tradition by taking no damn picture. He ain't taking no picture in the meeting. And whoever want to take a picture, that's they right if they want to take a picture. I'm not the press. I'm not the media. That's when you're supposed to, you know, like, watch what you're saying. Like the young lady had said up front before, you know, if anybody from the press or something like that, the media, you want to get an interview or whatever, then you come to us and let us know. I'm not the press, so, you know, it was kind of weird that I went through a lot of stuff and it had some direct results to this 11th tradition. You know, I remember one time, y'all know, we got logos. This is my logo. Somebody else got a shirt in here? My man here. You know, when we be kind of, you know, round in town, I always got something on. So I'm saying Narcotics Anonymous. And you're supposed to kind of watch how you act. You know, we not straight representing Narcotics Anonymous, but we is representing. We got the logo on. I'm just saying, suppose I seen you two guys downtown, and the police done pulled you over for stealing. Then we look at my man, I'm like, damn, he got an N.A. shirt on, man. He go to N.A. You know what I'm saying? Those N.A. people, I don't know about y'all, but where I'm from, we be in front of the church on Friday night. We got a meeting called Last House on the Block. You ever come to Buffalo, make sure you stop by there. Want to see some chaos? You want to see some fun? You want to see some recovery all mixed into one? Come there, because we stay clean no matter what. I'm just telling you. And it'd be like 30 or 40 acres, all outside. Some dude pull up with the old hot dog truck. Just people just be out there. You know, the meeting is over, and we still stay out there for another half an hour, 45 minutes. You know, the meeting after the meeting, right? Well, a lot of times when we do that, we really still carry the message. Because people know we there. I don't know if you ever walk by, like, some recovering addicts, you know, like having a function, and you walk by and be saying, look at those addicts. You know, they messed up, man. They, you know, and you just walk on by, like you better than. Only until you really find out, man, we've been having a great time over here. I'm talking about a great time, because ever since I've been in recovery, man, you know, my mom passed in 08. That wasn't a great time, but I still was having what? A great time in recovery. Matter of fact, I was prepared for that by other members. You know, I had an uncle pass. Man, all of our birthdays were the same day. My birthday is Monday. My birthday Monday. So I got to go to Chicago and get with my uncle, because me and two other uncles, we've been celebrating for the longest. Now I got to go in this year and be celebrating without my uncle. I don't know how y'all feel about y'all. Little mom for the devil. Huh? That was the uncle that always be drinking and stuff. Talking on crazy. Well, you go, get on over there. Get in, boy. That was that uncle there. Fun, huh? You know what I mean? But he always looked out for me. You know what I'm saying? And my uncle passed, man, you know, I'ma go, you know what I'm saying, and get with my other uncle. We're going to hang out. You know what I'm saying? It's just some stuff that be going on that you can consider it bad. But it's still an uphill journey. For real, man. I'm just saying, ever since I got here, you know, of course I got my little Barcelona stuff on, you know, and I keep on telling people, look, look what I said. Y'all see this retreat out here, right? It's a retreat like this going on where? Where else? Where else is it going on there? Think there's one going on in Pittsburgh right now? You think they're doing one in Philadelphia? Do you think they're doing one in Chicago? You think they're gathering up over down in Florida somewhere? What's this, Saturday evening? You think they're gathering somewhere in California? I know for sure that they is. Some meeting going on all around the world right now. Some kind of function is going on all around the world. Guess who invited? Me. I'm invited to that party. Man, that's got to be the one of the most awesomest feelings in the world. Because if you're anything like me, where I come from, you better not show up where you ain't invited. Man, you get a beat down, man. Coming up to him, man, let me get a piece of real. You know what I'm saying? I'm just telling you. But here, I don't think none of y'all know me. And ain't none of y'all question nothing about what I said, done, or anything. Matter of fact, this brother right here, Mr. Kelvin, came up and welcomed us when we was about 20 minutes away. Yeah, I was coming out of the restaurant. My man said, hey, what's up? Threw his hands up. I got him. Got him. My hands back. Huh? I'm just trying to tell you, man. This is an awesome program, man. One of the, I'm telling you. When I went to Barcelona, I got in the car, and I told the cab driver, take me to the convention. We didn't go to, I was there to convention. You know, convention. You know, convention. He said, and I figured he know what he's talking about. And then dude dropped me off somewhere, told me to get out. This is deep. I said, this is deep. What the fuck? This don't look like it. You know what I'm saying? And dude said, I'm just saying, he said, E-E, E-E. I said, $8. Oh, okay. And I had this funny money, you know, the euro. So, you know, I gave him a 10. Dude gave me 2 pennies and tried to drive off. Man, I grabbed dude, man, for real. What you think, because I'm a foreigner or out of towner or something, you gonna get away with that? Man, I grabbed dude. I said, man, I'm a bust. And I looked, and 2 pennies had one on them, like $1. I said, oh, shit. Holy shit. This is $2 he gave me. It was crazy. I didn't know no better. You know, it ain't like I've been some places. I've been in crack houses. Huh? For real, man, I've been stuck in one room for a long time. Now I'm way in Barcelona, and I'm trying to get to the convention. I'm thinking he done cheated me. Oh, you trying to play me. So now I'm walking around. Now, I don't see nobody drinking coffee. I'm just saying, I don't see nobody, you know, I'm looking for the coffee drinkers, the cigarette smokers. You know what I mean? I'm looking for some symbols. Is y'all listening? What a logo at on somebody's shirt. You know what I'm saying? And I'm walking and I'm looking. And I see this man, and I say, excuse me, sir. He looked and said, no English. I said, yeah, he's kind of rude. And I kept on walking, and I seen this white lady. And I said, excuse me, miss. Could you tell? She said, I speak no English. I said, oh. Then I seen this black lady. I said, Jesus Christ. All right, now. I said, hey, excuse me, ma. She looked at me, no English. I said, ah. For real, man, because I was lost, and y'all ain't listening, man. I was lost in another country. Dude done let me out. I don't even know where I'm at. I can't even talk. Now, I don't know if y'all understand. I can't even, I ain't got no little book. Then this dude said, yo, y'all ain't listening. What'd he say?
Yo.
I understand that language. My man said, yo. Man, I turned around. I'm telling you, man, yo, all right, y'all act like you don't like yo. Never be in a situation like that. I heard, yo, I look. My man said, yo, man, come down here. Ah! Ran down. Y'all ain't listening, man. Let me shut it. I'm going to shut this and shut up. Check this out. Man, I ran down there. Dude said, I'm from New Orleans. I said, yeah. I hugged him. My man said, don't hug me that tight because I'm gay. I hugged that motherfucker a little tighter. Shit. Man, you don't know how, man, y'all better pay attention. Oh, you don't know how good it is to see you. He said, but my boyfriend might get mad. Fuck that. Hug him too. I said, man, I'm so grateful, man. I'm lost. They said, no, you're not. The love of God has found you. For real. They said, come on, man. Get on this bus. We going to the convention. Golly, listen, boy. Get in that spot one day, and you will see what I mean about this program of Narcotics Anonymous, man. You know, I'm just so truly grateful that God blessed me. You know what I'm saying? Gave me a chance and opportunity, man. I don't know about nobody else. I ain't giving my chance and opportunity up. I come from where they were doing the game thing, at, you know, shooting all the time. Shoot you, it costs you wind, a different color, you know, all this old crazy stuff. And I thank God, because I was standing looking at the Eiffel Tower. Matter of fact, I went and touched it. I sat on there and said, man, take my picture. You know what I'm saying? And then I said to myself, you know what? If I die, I know I'm going to die clean. Because there's a lot of, look, you know, people say, you know, man, I had to use or I lost my clothes. I know you ain't lost, you gave it away. I don't plan on giving mine away. Not as long as I know I can keep coming here. I want to thank y'all for listening. I want to thank this retreat for asking me to come and speak. And thank y'all for letting me share.
Buffalo, New York. Thank you. Our next speaker is from the Tri-County of Southern Maryland area, off campus. His home group is Off Campus Recovery, John M.
I'm John, I'm a drug addict. It's good to be here, and I'm glad that I have the opportunity to stay clean another day. They asked me to come share on the 11th step, and what I know is subject to revision, especially what I know about the truth. That's what the basic text tells me, you know. And I say that because sometimes what I know to be true today may not be true for me tomorrow. So I have to be real careful how I share with others. And all I can do is share my experience. The 11th step tells us that we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him. It goes on to say, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. It seems pretty simplistic in its form, but for me, you know, I complicate everything. It's just how I am, you know. And before I had 11th step, I had to have a God of my understanding, the second step tells me that all I have to do is believe in something. There's an IP out there, Triangle Self-Obsession. It talks about what makes us different than people who grow up normally and who don't live a life of fear. And what it says is that when we're small infants, that all our needs are met by our parents. That they take care of all our needs. That as we get a little older, we realize that there's some needs we can take care of and some we need to still rely on our parents. Then as we get older, most people realize that they have spiritual needs and they learn to rely on a power outside of themselves to meet their spiritual needs, and that's where we come up short. We're convinced that we can go on taking care of our own needs. And the result of that is self-centeredness. And the result of being self-centered is fear. I was real confused about that when I got here, about being self-centered. Because really, you know, I had an inferiority complex when I got here. People would say, oh, you're self-centered. And I'd be like, I hate me. How can I be self-centered? And I didn't realize they were two different things. And that, you know, my first thought always was, what's best for me? What's in it for me? What's going to happen for me? Instead of really looking at what was best for the greater good. And that's where my self-centeredness came in from. There's a lot of reasons it's like that. I'm not going to get into a lot about, you know, how I got here. It just suffices to say that I come from a life of a lot of scarcity and lack for a lot of reasons. I was abandoned when I was small, and that left me with some feelings. And being abandoned, I wasn't really equipped to deal with these feelings. We have a feelings disease, you know, and I had all these feelings of being less than, of being not enough, and going through life with feeling like I wasn't enough. Really, it looked like since I wasn't enough, that there wasn't enough. So I had all this fear going through life that there just wasn't enough. There wasn't enough of anything. There wasn't enough money, wasn't enough clothes, wasn't enough food, wasn't enough love. And I was never equipped to function in the world, either on a physical or emotional level. So I did the best I could, and I became self-reliant. And like our book says, my very best thinking got me a seat in Narcotics Anonymous. The second step tells me that, in the second step it talks, as we see coincidences and miracles happen in the lives of others, this faith that we learn to develop becomes trust. And that was key for me. That's really what opened the doors up to me to some freedom. Because really, you know, when I got here, I really thought that I just wanted to learn how to shoot dope successfully and manage a bank account and healthy relationships. I never realized really what I was seeking was peace. That's really what was missing in my life. And I sought all kinds of things to bring about that peace, because really I thought that the closest I could get to peace was to have pleasure. So I became a hedonist and a pleasure seeker. And I went through life just seeking fun. And so I was feeling fun, which I equated to peace, or I wasn't. And I never realized that happy is a feeling that comes and goes. So I'm chasing this feeling of happiness and it keeps eluding me and I can't figure out why. I think it's something I'm doing. And it took me a long time to realize that it was just a feeling that comes and goes, and that really what I needed in my life was some peace, that I could be peaceful under every situation. And I hear some people share, like, you're only as happy as you want to be, and that's just not true for me. If I have a death of a child, I'm not happy. I'm not going to be happy. I can want to be happy all I want. I'm not going to be happy. But I can find some peace in it. I can find peace in anything. So then I went on this journey to try to find peace, you know, and it talks about we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves, and that tells me right there that we came to believe. It didn't say we believe, it says we came to believe, which means it's a process. So I went through this process of coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore it. So I developed a relationship with this power through the second step. Like I said, and how that happened for me is because I'm an evidence guy, I'm a show me God. I know about trust. I know about give me your money, I'll be right back. I know about I won't hurt you. I know about I'll be right back. I know about your dad loves you even though he's not here. I know about all that trust stuff. So I need some evidence. And it talks about, like I said, about these coincidences happening in the lives of others. That people that couldn't stay clean, including me, a day at a time I was staying clean. So all of a sudden this little bit of faith that I believed in this power that I didn't understand, I started to slowly build some trust with. I started not just believing, but knowing things were going to happen right. It talks about in there that once we develop this relationship with the power that we do or don't understand, and that we have this faith, that the faith can become trust, and that the trust can become acceptance. And acceptance is where peace comes from. So I learned about acceptance, and one of the biggest things that helped me is I learned that acceptance doesn't always mean agreement. Because that eluded me for a long time. I thought that if I surrendered and accepted something, that meant I was saying it was okay. Those things that happened to me, I wasn't okay with. I'm not okay with. I'm not going to say it's okay. And I really felt like if I surrendered to that, I was saying it was okay. And I was very fortunate. I had a sponsor to let me know that just because you accept it, don't make it okay. It just means you've come to accept it. Sometimes I hear people say in the meetings, you don't always get what you want, but you get what you need. I don't buy that either. You get what you get. I don't know if you need it or not. And I'm not trying to offend anybody. I know some people have real strong religious beliefs, and the 11th step isn't about religious beliefs. I mean, it's really not important if you call your God Jesus or Muhammad or Buddha or whatever, you know, the doorknob or whatever your little thing is. It's fine. As long as you have a system of faith that is built on trust and acceptance. That's all that's really important. But, you know, I hear people say sometimes, I'm here through God's grace and mercy, and that's cool, you know. I'm sure that I really struggle with that, though, because I just don't believe that God says to one person, you've been beat up enough, you can have all your dreams met, we're going to put you in Narcotics Anonymous, and you get to stay clean. And this other guy here, well, he's not so lucky. He gets to die of the horrors of addiction. I don't think it works that way. I believe that we're all given a window of grace, that we all have an opportunity. Sometimes we have several opportunities. Sometimes the opportunities run out. And we use that one more, and the window doesn't come open. But we all have a window of grace. We all have an opportunity, a spiritual moment, a burning bush, whatever you want to call it. But I know what happened for me is I didn't come in here one day and I said, gee, it's Friday night. I wonder what's happening with that 12-step group Narcotics Anonymous. Let me go check it out. I think today I want to stay clean the rest of my life. It didn't happen for me like that. I don't know why, but I said, I'm going to try this program again. I know it doesn't work. It ain't worked in the past, but I'm going to try it. And I went, and I stayed clean, and a miracle happened in my life. I don't know if God chose me, if he's got a big remote control and said it's my turn to walk through the gate. I don't know. I know that I got a window of grace and that I have an opportunity. I do know that the God of my understanding does give me one thing. He gives me the gift of choice. Now, good things happen to bad people. I don't know if it's God's way of giving somebody else a gift. Maybe they need to run into me and collect insurance money. You know, maybe they need to stab me to get healed. I don't know. I don't know what the plan is. But that's what I did in my second step. And the reason I'm going through 2 and 3 is to get to 11, because that's how you set up 11. Because in 11, we continue. We don't start, we continue. Third step is about a commitment. Not about I think. It's about a commitment. We're going to make a decision, a daily decision, hopefully, an hourly decision, to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, again, as we understand. That means that I quit saying prayers that say please. That don't do no good. Don't do no good to ask God please. God ain't going to want you to beg. God's given you everything you need already. So if you want to pray, try saying thank you. Because you got it. Just a matter of what you're willing to do to get it. God's in control. The world's spinning exactly as it should, not how I'd have it. When my will and God's will is in alignment, I'm a happy camper. I'll tell you how spiritual I am. But when God's will and my will ain't quite lined up, God's wrong. That's my thinking. God's got it wrong, man. He needs to crank it up a few RPMs. It ain't turning just right. Instead of me just getting out of the way and understanding that everything's exactly as it should be. I've been given the gift of choice and opportunity, and the world's spinning exactly as it should. I don't have any excuses for what I don't have in life. I had about the worst childhood as you could have. I was abandoned, I was in an orphanage, and I was abused. I don't say that because I want somebody to feel sorry, but I got lots of excuses for failure. I could tell you all the reasons in the world why I shouldn't succeed. My parents both died. They didn't leave me a nickel. Cost me money to bury both of them. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I have the same opportunity that everybody has. We all do. So I make that daily commitment to accept the world as it is and not as I would have it. To say thank you instead of please. Because God's good. And I use the term God loosely. I'm not a Christian. If you are, that's great. And I'm not saying that to put down Christianity. I'm just trying to let you know that you don't have to be. If you are, that's cool. God's a good term. It's short and to the point. You know, it means greater than me. That's all I know. I don't know what he looks like. I don't know if he's human, if he's a tree, whatever. I just know he is. And I know I ain't it. So I make this commitment daily to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Doesn't mean I turn my life over to God, just the care of God. That means He watches out for the bigger picture and I do the work. I do half the work, I get all the credit. What a great deal. And I go through life like that. Because I'm searching for peace. I'm not looking to be happy anymore. I'm not looking to be pleasure, to be satisfied. I can get all that. $50, I can get you all the pleasure you want downtown. That ain't going to bring you no peace. So that takes me to the 11th step. So now that I have this commitment, and now that I've had this little bit of knowing, not believing, but knowing, that I've learned in the second step, that I know that God's world's turning as it should, that I'm right where I should be, that I ain't got to worry about none of that, just do my thing. The gift of knowing, I get to my 11th step. So I seek, so sought, that means I'm looking constantly, vigilantly, to improve on my second and third step. Which is my conscious contact, not my unconscious contact, not what I dream or think or meditate, but what I know. My conscious contact with God as I understand Him, whatever that means to you, or you don't understand Him in my case, because I don't. I've been around here a long time. I'm not saying I had to get a pat on the back. My clean date, September 5th, 1986. All I'm saying is that in all that time, I still don't understand God. In fact, I think it's pretty egotistical that we think that great, big, smart humans understand everything. You know, sometimes it's okay not just not to know. You know, when we define God, it says in our book, we limit God. How about that? And I see people get up here and they say, I'll tell you all about God and what He did for me. I said, man, that's good, man. You got Him on the hotline, on the cell phone, or what? God speaks to me. Well, He speaks to me too, you know. Sometimes He tells me just keep on keeping on. Sometimes He says, it is what it is. And my favorite thing, when I meditate, this is what I hear. I don't know if y'all know Doreen. Doreen started a big part of Narcotics Anonymous on the East Coast. She's an older black lady now. She's old now, but she was always full of joy when I was clean. And she'd always come up to you and give you big, juicy hugs. And, you know, and she'd always say, go rock the boat. It'll be all right. And when I meditate, that's what I hear. I hear, it'll be all right. That's all I hear. I said, man, my kid's acting up. I don't know what to do and this and that. And I just hear, it'll be all right. That's all I hear. It's just going to be all right. So I seek through prayer and meditation. Prayer is asking, speaking, communicating one way. Meditating is listening, accepting, feeling. And it even tells me that what I pray for. Man, I don't pray for things or stuff or feelings. I pray only for knowledge of His will for us, not for me. You don't say praying only for God's will for me. I wish it did. I got a lot of things I'd like. I need a new motorcycle and a bigger boat. And maybe a couple extra rooms on the house. And, you know, whatever. The power to carry that out. See, it's pretty simplistic. Same just like the Serenity Prayer says. You know, Serenity Prayer is the most powerful prayer we have. We say it all the time. And it's the prayer that most people know the least about. What's it really asking us to do? It's asking us to do three things, to get three things. It says, grant me the serenity. Serenity is another word for peace. That's what we're seeking, right? Peace. Two, acceptance, just like the 11th step tells me. Accept the things I can't change. Acceptance. Power, courage. Same thing in the 11th step, power to carry that out. Courage to change the things I can. Power to change the things I can. And then wisdom, to know the difference. Which I seek through prayer and meditation. So it's all tied together. You know? So I seek through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. As I understand, I'm praying only for now. What's God's will for me? I went through this for years, man. I was like, what's God want for me, man? Maybe I'm supposed to be like the male Mother Teresa. I need to go out somewhere in the middle of nowhere and starve and heal little kids, you know? But nah, that ain't my gig. That ain't it. Nah, that don't feel right. And I was like, well, maybe God wants me to be rich so I can leave a lot of money to my kids. And I said, nah. So I went through that whole process. You know, what's God's will for me? What's God's will? And I heard a guy say it, and it really hit home for me. He said, God's will for me is what's best for the greater good. Damn, man, that's the most unselfish thing I ever heard. That's what God's will for me is. Whenever I have a question, because God's will isn't one thing. God's will is a response to everyday stuff. You know, the hundreds of questions we get a day. What do I do here, left or right? God's will, my will. God's will, my will. So anymore, when I run up against that situation, I ask myself, what's for the greater good? And usually that's God's will. Not what's best for me, what's in it for me, what can I get out of it? So I understand what God's will for me is today, and then how do I get the power to carry it out? How do I get power? I get power through peace and acceptance. The formula is pretty simple. We trust. Through trust, we have faith. Through faith, we find trust. Through trust, acceptance. Through acceptance, peace. Because really, acceptance is the key to all our problems. Mm-hmm. Not that simple. Trust me, you can take that really out of context real quick. The reality is, man, is either it's got my name on it or it don't. You know? I'll tell you a story one time, not long ago, I got real sick. And I tell the story a lot because it's funny, because it's really how, like, a lot of the world sees things. I hadn't seen this woman in a long time, and You know, it was a weird time in my life. I had I've been dating this woman who was like the light of my life and had like 20 plus years recovery, and we were like spiritually connected and we were in love and we were trying to get married and we were buying a house and we were relocating and we're starting a life, and that's wonderful. And we had just bought a house down by the water, and it's a beautiful home, and it was the thing we'd always dreamed of. And like 3 days before we closed on the house, I had to go to the doctor, and they diagnosed me with terminal cancer. And they said, you know, it's not good. We can't stop it. The average life expectancy is 7 to 17 months, and you're probably not going to survive. I was like, damn, man. So I run into this lady, and she said, man, I hadn't seen you. You look great. How you doing? I said, man, this girl I told you about that I've been dating all these years, I'm madly in love with, I asked her to marry me, we're getting married. She said, man, God's good. And I said, got this beautiful house. We finally found the house of our dreams. It's back. There's nobody around. It's near the water. It's beautiful. And she said, man, God's good. And I said, I just got back from the doctor, and he said, I got terminal cancer. And she just kind of looked at the ground. And I looked right at her, and I said, God's not good anymore. When did God stop being good? Because my will and God's will don't line up. God's an asshole? I don't think so. I think maybe the problem's with me. God is always good. It's always as it should be. I'm the one with the problem. I need to find the acceptance. If I want peace, I need to find acceptance. Acceptance, acceptance, acceptance. Where does acceptance come from? Acceptance comes through trust. Where does trust come from? From a guy that was abused all his life. It comes through faith. It says in the book, we only have to believe a little tiny bit. So I believed a little tiny bit. I met this guy. I was early in recovery. I was 22 years old. And I remember the rules of the street were don't trust. Anybody use like I, you know what happens when you trust. That's how you get beat. That's how you wait on the corner for 3 days when the guy be right back and you know it. And you're still there 3 days later and he ain't coming back. And you can't come to acceptance with it. He ain't coming back because you got beat because you dope sick. So I know what all that looks like. But all I had to do was believe. And I gave a guy a little bit of information about me, man. He held on to it. And I believed it. And he told me, he said, you just don't use today, no matter what. And I didn't use. And it like blew my mind, man. I couldn't believe that I didn't use. And he said, just believe me. He said, you might think about using every 10 minutes. But tomorrow, you may only think about using every 15 minutes. The next day, maybe every 20 minutes. And I saw that start to happen. And I remember there was like a day when I only thought about using a couple times, a couple weeks later. And then a time went by where I only thought about using once that day. And then there came a time when I didn't think about using for a day or two. You know? And that little tiny bit of faith become trust. I started to believe. I started to trust. Like Louise says, I saw another addict. I'd been up shooting dope for 2 days. I was beaten, broken. I had just got ripped off of my last shot of dope. The sun was coming up. I had shorts on. It was September. It was one of those days like today where it was like 80 degrees during the day and like 40 at night, and I was freezing and I was dope sick. And I remember I asked this guy if he'd buy me a soda, and I remember him knowing. He knew. And he looked right at me. And I knew he was in recovery because when he went to buy a soda, he had a chip. And I asked him a little bit about it, and he told me he'd been clean for 5 years. It's a long story. I don't have time to get into it. But what's important is when I looked at him, I knew that he used dope like I did. I knew that. I knew that he'd experienced those feelings like I did. And I also knew that he had found freedom. And he didn't use anything. Because our message is hope, and our promise is freedom. And the message comes from the recovering addict, the ultimate weapon. And when I looked at him, I knew without a doubt that he did dope like me. I knew he had found a way out. You know? I heard in a meeting the other day, it was pretty cool, I'll share it with you, you may have heard it, but the guy said that recovery doesn't open the doors to heaven and let us in, but it does open the doors to hell and let us out. I thought that was powerful. That's what happened to me. You know? So I go through life today just trusting and believing. Doesn't mean I'm perfect. Doesn't mean I'm a spiritual giant. Believe me, I fight every step of the way. Most of the stuff in my life has fingernails on it. I still think I have a motorcycle-shaped hole in my heart, a boat-sized hole in my heart, or that a new house is going to fill me, or something over the next hill around the next bend is going to fix me. But what I've come to realize is ain't nothing wrong with me. I'm not empty. I'm full. I suffer from abundance, from a guy who came in here with scarcity and lack, from whom enough was never enough, to a guy that's so full and rich beyond my wildest dreams, that I experience peace a lot of times. Not every day. But even when I was sick and I was in radiation and chemotherapy, I had peace. Didn't matter. It was out of my control. That helped a lot. But still, it didn't matter. If I was to die, I was to die. If I was to live, I was to live. And it's still that way today. I still get tested regularly. If it comes up positive, it comes up positive. Ain't a goddamn thing I can do about it. I'm not going to waste what life I have sitting there worrying about things that are out of my control. And one of the things my first sponsor did with me when I was a cocky little newcomer, and he says, let's talk about powers. I said, let's talk about it. He said, take this piece of paper and go in your room there for half an hour and write down everything you have power over. So I took 4 sheets of paper, and I went back in the room. 20 minutes later, I come out with my head down, humbled my ass. I told him, man, I ain't got power over shit. He said, you got power over the way you perceive the world around you and everything in that little 3-foot circle you're standing in. That's all the power you got. So if you ain't got power over shit, who does? You better find somebody who does. So I'm a very fortunate recovering addict, and I'm out of time, but I do want to tell you that we have a 3-phase disease, man, that looks like mental, that looks like physical, mental, and spiritual. The good news is we have a promise that addresses all those issues. So we have a physical part that once we use, we can't stop. We have a promise that says we can stop using. That's reality. We have a mental disease that tells us that once we think about using it, we can't stop till that need satisfied, that obsession. We have a promise for that. It says we can lose the desire to use. We have a spiritual malady, a spiritual dilemma, man. We don't know how to live. We're going on the best we can with our self-centered asses, trying to run shit, and we're like goddamn hamster on the treadmill. You know, busy fools, going nowhere quick. But we have a promise, man. It says we can find a new way to live. And the good news with the promise, it says, is that this addict, any addict, not some, not those that are incapable or all this other bullshit, any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. And like I said, I'm your garden variety drug addict, man. I'm just another addict out here trying to make it. I came from sleeping under bridges, shaking a McDonald's cup with a wash and a couple quarters in it, giving blood and plasma for $12 a pint, sleeping under bridges, to a guy that had all his dreams met. All I had to do was not use a day at a time, get a sponsor, and work the program in Narcotics Anonymous, not just the fellowship. The fellowship ain't the program, don't get confused. The program's the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous. You want to get better, work the fucking steps. Or not. Or like Greg P. says in the pamphlet, the only pamphlet with a negative overtone, it's the best pamphlet we had, is called The Triangle Self-Obsession that I quoted in the beginning. And the last thing it says is, we must grow up or die. Period. It says the end's always the same. It don't say sometimes. It don't say maybe. It says our ends are always the same. Jail's institution, in the first chapter, it says dereliction and death. And death's a little better than dereliction. I ain't experienced death, but I experienced dereliction. And I got to think death's better. So I ain't afraid of dying. I'm afraid of that dereliction. Anyway, I'm Agnew John. Thanks for letting me share.